Welcome to the Buccaneers Observer Podcast. This is Ralph Phillips.
And I'm Molly Bay.
Man, somebody get me the phone number to the Glazers. Or an email or something. I got to get in touch with these guys. This has been bothering me all week. I tell you, me and Molly were on Christmas vacation. We were going to try and do some podcasts while we were out, but we never really got a chance to do it. And we thought, well, we won't mess around with the Dallas game because we, you know, haven't had a chance to get around to all the details and stuff we like to do and with Christmas and all that. So we weren't going to do it until I started watching All 22. I tell you what, I got so excited. This has been the most fun All 22 I've ever watched. And that's saying something because I've been doing this for, what, a decade now?
Yeah.
Normally, when you look at my sheets, when I do them, it's very sparse. You know, when I point out something that's happened noteworthy. But on this one, it was almost every play. If you look at my sheet, it's just filled with stuff. I mean, this was an exciting and interesting thing. It took me like 12 hours to go through this film. There was just so much stuff. But I'm going to start off with this. Everybody knows I'm not a big let's fire people and get rid of people guy, but it's going to be a huge mistake if we get rid of Cutter.
Wow.
Huge mistake. That's why I want to get in touch with the Glazers and just tell them what I've seen, what I know, and be like, man, you know, you're going to be ruining something really, really good here. We are so on the brink of greatness. It's scary.
So what's the problem then? Because it seems like we've got all this inconsistency. We've got penalties. We've got mistakes in the red zone. You know, we have all the yards, can't score. Mm-hmm. And to play devil's advocate, it seems to me like that all comes back to coaching.
You got to figure this is the first time he's ever been a head coach. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, he's going to make mistakes on. This is what, his third year? Right. When I first watched this game live, my first thought, well, you know, because we always talk about, did we lose the game? Did they beat us? Did we win the game? All that good stuff. Was it the refs?
Did we beat ourselves?
Right.
Yeah.
And my first thought after watching this was, we totally lost that game. I mean, we had it in the bag and we just let it get away. We just made dumb mistakes.
And Dallas didn't do anything really spectacular.
No. I mean, we put a stop to them. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott, what did he end up getting, like 88 yards or something? I mean, I think his longest run was 13 yards. I mean, he ran the ball like 22 times. I mean, they had short field position most of the game, had very good field position most of the game. And their, you know, one of their touchdowns was a defensive score. So they, you know, offensively, they couldn't do anything against us.
Yeah.
I mean, they kept going three and out or, you know.
When I think another touchdown was because we fumbled it really
right.
close to
we
the end
fumbled
zone,
it. They got it on the 2 yard line and then just ran it
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's two touchdowns right there that, you know, wasn't their offense doing anything.
It was our offense.
Right.
Screwing up.
Right. And this goes to what you were saying. Is it coaching? And yeah, I think coaching has a lot to do with it. But if you notice, we're not getting beat. We're beating ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, if we could play a perfect game where defense, special teams, and offense all just played the way they could play, ain't nobody in the league that we can't beat.
But how do you fix that? If it's a coaching issue.
Well, I think that, you know, with the defense, it was the Mike Smith debacle at the beginning of the year. You know, that was five games just basically washed down the toilet.
And a lot of injuries.
And we had a lot of injuries, but you can't use that as an excuse because
no,
all
it,
NFL
it,
teams. Yeah, it adds, you know.
If you don't have depth or all your depth like ours is young, it's not that they're bad players. They're just young.
Right. Yeah, we have very young players.
And I think they've done well considering.
Very well. And you had the suspension with Winston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that really screwed up the first part of the year. And then you had the back and forth between Fitzpatrick and Winston. You know, Fitzpatrick getting benched for Winston and then Winston getting benched for Fitzpatrick and then Fitzpatrick getting benched for Winston. There's been a lot this year. It kind of reminds me of the, what was it, 2012 year with Shiano. It was just a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But we have a really, really good team.
And I think to Cutter's credit, he's dealt with a lot of these issues very well.
Yes.
And overcome a lot of them.
Yes. And I think the, you know, he was loyal to Mike Smith. They had the handshake agreement or the gentleman's agreement that whoever got the head coaching job first would hire the other one.
Is that true?
Yeah, I've heard him say that.
Okay.
Cutter.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. Okay. I think I've heard Mike Smith say it too. So, you know, it was hard for, he didn't want to fire his friend. He felt loyal to him. I would assume, you know, this is speculation. Yeah. You can't visit people's attention.
Well,
like that,
a longtime colleague at a minimum.
Right. Yeah. They've worked together their whole professional career just about. Yeah. And, you know, it was probably tough for him, but he did the right thing. And I think it taught him a lesson as a head coach. You know, you've got to do what's most important for the team and winning. So, you know, he's learned that, and I think it'll be something going forward that he has to just put aside personal feelings with this stuff and do what's going to basically keep him in his job, basically, which that equates to Buccaneers winning. But if we get rid of him, if we get rid of Cutter, which everybody is just assuming is going to happen.
They're just beating the drum on this.
It's
everyone's already picked the next head coach. You know?
Yeah. All the media is talking about, I mean, they're not even talking about Cutter even having a possibility of coming back.
Yeah.
It's just done. It's just, and it's really strange to me. It's like with Morris.
Raheem.
Yes. I couldn't remember his first name. Raheem Morris. You know, the team gave up. We had terrible, terrible football in 2011.
Oh,
it was
awful.
It was awful. And, with Lovey, we had games where we just got butt stomped.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember the Baltimore game. I think that was Lovey. It might have been Shiano. You know, they had 5 touchdowns in the first half. Biggest game Joe Flacco's ever had. This happened consistently. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were putting bad football teams out there throughout, you know, the last 3 coaches. We were getting beat, you know, badly. But with this team, we're not getting beat badly. You know, anytime we get the ball and we're down, you got that feeling we could come back. There has been nobody that's been able to stop us marching down the field. Except for maybe the Chicago Bears.
And turnovers.
Right, but that's correct. But you're right. Yeah, we keep beating ourselves. And that's what I thought with this game. I was like, after watching, I was like, damn it, there we go again. We're just beating ourselves. But that's not what I found. While now we did not do ourselves any favors sometimes, it was 100% the referees in this game.
Whoa.
Oh my gosh. Molly can attest to this. I was so frustrated last night. I was walking around. I was like, I've got to write a letter to the commissioner or something. This is just so bad.
I'm trying to get Ralph to do a YouTube video, like clip it all together.
Yeah, I probably will during the off season, but during the season, it's just so hard to get all this stuff done and everything.
Well, right around the corner.
In time. Yes. Probably starting. Yeah. 2 weeks from now, I'll probably just start kicking out all these videos. But we had brace yourselves. So now, I've come down hard on the refs. One, I think their job is way too hard. You know, we have added anytime this is an engineering rule, the more complex something is, the easier it is to break, the more likely it's going to break, and the more likely any little small quirk in the system is going to break the system. Well, we have complicated the NFL rule book so much, it's broken. And these refs cannot possibly call and keep track of all the stuff they've got to keep track of.
They're so subjective. Like,
very
for
subjective.
Instance, the new hit on the quarterbacks rule where you can't lay your body weight into the quarterback. You have to gently lay him down.
Yeah.
Cradle his
it's
head.
It's totally subjective. How do you – now, false start, completely objective. You can see it, boom, you know it's a false start. Neutral zone infraction, boom.
Yeah.
You know, even pass interference – you generally should be able to say,
well, no, that's
he hit
been,
the guy.
I think, one of the most inconsistent ones.
It's very inconsistent. That's the thing. It's all inconsistent. And we just keep adding layer and layer and layer of rules. And we're expecting these refs to not only manage the game, the rules of the game, things that actually affect the game, you know, like holding, face masks, things of that nature. And now we're asking them to protect the player's health. I mean, these guys, we're acting like these guys are medics or physicians out there.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they've got to worry about the player's health now. It's not just the game. And plus, they have to worry about the player's behavior. You know, we've got all these taunting rules. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's what does that have to do with football? Why can't you get up in somebody's face and call them an LMF or you know, you give them mama jokes? What's that got to do with football?
Yeah.
Nothing. But we want the refs to be out there like nannies.
Yeah.
Over these guys.
We're trying to take the violence out of a violent sport.
It's ridiculous. And we're leaving it up to these refs to do that. Now, with all that being said, these referees are human. And when you have a team like Dallas going up against a team like the Buccaneers, you're talking about a top market team, mm-hmm. top tier, and a stadium packed with 75,000 people.
And this just monument of a stadium, this like the Jumbotron, and they have easy, you know, all the seats are like Lazy Boys, basically.
Yes, you've got cheerleaders dancing like strippers all over the place. I mean, they're up on the second, third, fourth level.
And Jerry Jones like hovering in his lair above the field.
And all these refs know they're on national TV, and this is why we got Hockey League for this game. This was like the top tier ref crew.
It was Hockley?
Yeah, Hockley's son.
Oh, his son.
Yeah.
Is he retired?
Yeah, Ed Hockley retired.
Oh, good. I didn't like him.
He was such a camera hog. He loved to get on camera with his guns.
He looked like a bodybuilder, like posing. You know how they do their poses in their competitions?
He would, too. He'd be out there.
Yeah. Flexing his muscles.
If you got him, flaunt him. So here they are, these refs, they know they're being nationally broadcast across the country. This was a game that, you know, unless you were in a market for a football team, you were watching the Dallas Buccaneers game. Dallas is a popular team. It's probably when I was selling merchandise for football teams, Dallas Cowboy fans nationwide spent by far more than anybody else. Second place was Denver, surprisingly. Huh. Yeah.
Well, and this game had playoff implications for them.
For Dallas.
Yeah.
Yes. So here you have, the referees are human. Here you have them sitting, knowing the whole country's watching. All the Dallas fans in the whole country are watching. And Dallas fans are a very large group. And they're a large part of what keeps the NFL going. They're a big money maker. You're sitting in basically a small city, 75,000 people. Sitting there watching you, you're going to, maybe not consciously, but you're going to subconsciously not want to piss them off.
Yeah.
You're not going to want to piss Dallas fans off. You're always going to hedge a little bit in Dallas's favor. Well, they hedged a little too far. There were 11 instances of the refs screwing us over on penalties. Either penalties that they called that shouldn't have been penalties or penalties they didn't call that should have been penalties. It was ridiculous. Oh, my gosh. And they were blatant, too. Some of these were just so bad. I'm like, man, these guys need to be fired. Now, on the flip side, Dallas had 4 times that the refs screwed them over.
Okay. So, 11 times for us, 4 for them.
Right. And this was a heavily penalized game, too.
Yeah.
And when I was watching it, I'm thinking, man, we are getting a lot of penalties. Well, let's go over these things. Let's go over what I saw. And this is going to surprise some people, especially one play in particular. First quarter, 12-17, Jameis Winston throws to a covered Humphreys. Now, he had Cameron Brate wide open at the line of scrimmage with nobody near him for 15 yards. This was a bad decision on Winston's part. I'm going to get to that later. Humphreys ran a curl route, but he was held by 54 Jalen Smith. I mean, Jalen Smith put his arm around him. And this was like in the middle of the field, and Winston threw it to him, and he's got Jalen Smith draped on him. He had his arm around Humphrey's neck, and then he batted the ball away. He just like stuck his hand down and batted the ball away from his chest when it arrived. It definitely should have been pass interference. It was blatant right there. You could see it.
And no call.
No call. No, it was an incomplete thing. We ended up having to settle for a field goal the next play. Then first quarter, 12:08. This is the play after the field goal, 88 on Dallas Cowboys held Nassib, allowing Elliott to run up the middle for 11 yards. Now, later in the game, we had a 33-yard run back called from Barber because Auclair, 82, held one of their guys. This was the same exact thing. Same exact hold, same exact position. They didn't call it. Now, consistency is a huge thing. If you're going, it's just like with the justice system. If you're going to punish people for a crime, you need to punish everybody equally.
Right.
You can't just pick and choose who you're going to punish. Now, some of these you can say, well, maybe the refs didn't see it. You know, Maybe they did see it. Maybe they didn't see it. Maybe they were at a different angle and it didn't look like a hold or whatever. So you can let some of these slide, but some of these were just egregious. Let's get to some of them. First quarter, 9-13. Consistency, man. Refs call Alan Hearns for a block in the back. Now, this is one for Dallas. But it happened at the line of scrimmage. Now, there's this weird thing. Me and Molly were watching a game. I think it was last Thursday or something.
No, the Ravens game.
Ravens game against us?
Yeah.
Yeah. They threw a flag for block in the back. And then they got on the microphone and said it wasn't a block in the back because it was near the line of scrimmage. And me and Molly were like, what? I had never heard that before.
And Twitter was very angry about this as well.
Right. Well, I looked it up. That is a rule.
Are you serious?
It is a rule.
I've never heard that in my life.
Right. It's called...
You can block in the back at the line of scrimmage.
You can block at the back within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage. Either way, as long as you're in between the tackle box. Now, see, here we go again. Okay. Right. These rules are so complex.
It's like a... So, in...
If you're...
Between the tackles.
Between the tackle box.
And within 3 yards, either side of the line of scrimmage.
Either side.
So you've got like a
six
square.
Yes.
Like a square that you can do it in.
Rectangle, yes. We'll say it could be a square, but that's for all you geometry freaks out there. We're going to call it a rectangle. Okay. So you've got 3 yards on either side of the line where you can block in the back.
Huh.
Never knew that.
Me neither.
Never knew that. It's called close line play. C-L-O-S-E, line play.
I have never heard that call before in my life.
Me neither. I had to look it up.
Or that rule existed. I'm glad you looked it up.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I've got it here. When I get down to that note, I'll read it off to you. But here's the thing about that. We've been watching football for many, many decades. I have anyhow. Never, ever heard that. And... I've pointed it out quite a few times in these podcasts how, you know, we have linemen that are blocking David in the back or whatever, and they're not being called. Well, sometimes they call it, sometimes they don't. They're not consistent at all. And to have never heard this close line rule is craziness.
I wonder how many of those we saw where we're like, oh, that should have been a block in the back. How was that not a block in the back? And then the reason they didn't call it was because of that exception to the rule.
Because of that rule. But here's the thing. They call it all the time. Like in this instance, they called it on Hearns for a block in the back. But this happened at the line of scrimmage.
Huh.
So it makes it totally, if you're not going to be consistent, it makes it useless.
You know, I think that the refs have gotten increasingly worse since that collective bargaining agreement.
Oh, yeah. No, we gave them way too much power.
Since their collective bargaining agreement,
yes.
Their performance, I think, has just gone down the tube.
Yeah.
Like, everyone complained about how bad the replacement refs were.
They weren't bad.
They weren't that bad, but I think...
That was a propaganda.
Considering what they had to come into. But then, I don't feel like the refs are any better.
No, they... What we said with the whole collective bargaining thing and the strike, we basically said, refs, we can't do without you. We got on our knees and we said, we can't do without you. You know what happens when you give a group of people that power?
And they just run with
it.
They go crazy.
Yes. These guys feel basically untouchable now. They know, you know, they can strike whenever they feel like it and get whatever they want.
Well, and then all they have to do is evoke the word of player safety.
Yes. Right, yes. Every flag they throw now, you can say, oh, well, you know, I thought the guy was going to get hurt, so that's what's important.
Right.
And, yes, ever since the collective bargaining, they have just gotten worse. And plus, they've had all this stuff piled on them, too. And they become mini celebrities in the game. Yeah. I mean, now...
The fact that we know Ed Hockley's name.
Or Mike Priera.
Yeah.
Or, you know...
Oh, I can't stand him.
That's what happens now. They're becoming celebrities. They're retiring and going into the broadcast booth.
Right.
So now that's their goal. I mean, they're making a lot of money in these broadcast booths, too.
Gene Sarator is one of those, too.
Why do we know these
Which
guys?
I always liked him as a ref. I didn't realize he retired, and now he got a gig. I don't know. It's not with Fox. Somebody else.
Right. Well, you see,
like Mike Pereira. But then it's like, he's not very good as an announcer. He's good as a ref. Not
as an announcer.
No.
Kind of like Rondé Barber.
Yeah, maybe he's going to grow into the position.
So something has to be done with these refs, man. We got to do something. That's why when the collective bargaining thing and the strike came, I said the best thing we could do is just fire them all. Let the scabs keep playing. Yes, because we cannot give the referees that type of power and ego.
Yeah.
But what do we do, man? I tell you what, it got me so mad. John Gruden getting on TV, just complain. Oh, the poor refs. You know, we're, Davis player safety was brought up again. This is a threat to the players to not have the official refs out there because the players are going to get hurt. And, you know, these refs don't know what they're doing. I mean, it was just complaining the whole time, which is funny because John Gruden was always the first one up in a ref's face when he didn't get a call right. And it's another thing, too. You see it all the time. You'll see a bad call on TV. That's blatantly obvious. It happened in this game a couple times. It's a bad call. It's blatantly obvious. And the announcers will be like, well, refs make mistakes.
Yeah, you can't see everything.
Yeah, they'll
give excuses for them. Why do we have 12 refs on the field then? I don't know. How many do we have?
7, 8?
A lot.
I can't remember.
One on every side so they can see this crap.
Yeah, plenty. I want to say 10. I don't know.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
And now they got the benefit of replay. They're having replay. The they've surface.
Got they've the got guys in New York.
Right, that see it from on the TV angles and then tell them what the right call is.
That's ridiculous.
There's no excuse for them getting this wrong.
Yeah, and it's destroying the game. I mean, anybody that watches the game, you know this. You know this for a fact. On a kickoff and a punt, you know it's going to be a flag.
Yeah.
There are no more kickoff returns.
Or they're not going to do anything. Nothing's going to happen. It's going to be a...
Fair catch. Yeah, fair catch. Yeah, well, that's the best thing to do because you can't run the ball. If you do, it's going to be a flag somewhere.
Yeah.
And
well, and then they said how they changed the rule on the kickoff to make it safer, but also make it possible for more explosive plays, which is just a blatant lie.
Yeah, that's not totally exactly. Yeah, the kickoff rules are just ridiculous, and they might as well just get rid of kickoffs.
Right.
If they're going to do this stupid crap.
Right, just give it to you on the 25.
Yeah. And the same thing with every pass. Every pass you see thrown, the first thing everybody does is they get up and they look around for a flag.
Right.
Everybody watching at home, that's the first thing you do. You look for that little yellow thing to pop up in the corner of the TV screen. Flag. It's gotten ridiculous. We got to do something or the NFL's going to be a shell of itself within a few years. So anyhow, let's get back to the crap that they did to us.
Get off our soapbox here.
Yeah, we're getting ready to get higher up on our soapbox.
Oh, no.
In the first quarter, 8:50 left was... In the first quarter, Vita Vea was held before he reached out and grabbed Prescott's face mask. Mm. Now, this one infuriated me when I was watching it. Vita Vea totally trashes his defender. I've got a lot to say about Vita Vea. Really exciting. But he was held as he was going towards Prescott, and then the guy releases him. Vita Vea falls forward, and he grabs Prescott's face mask, and he sacks Prescott. Mm-hmm. Now, they threw a flag for face mask. And in the replay, they show Vita Vea grab his face mask, pull his head down, and then sack him. So you think, yeah, face mask. No, wrong. Totally wrong. It happened so fast that when they slowed it down, they had to slow it down twice as slow as they normally slow replays down. Because when I was watching this, I was like, man, that looks, watching the replay, I was like, it looks really, really slow. So then I compared it to another replay that they did. It was twice as slow. That's how they had to do it. And then I timed it at how fast he grabbed hold of this guy's face mask. 0.01 second.
Oh, my God.
A hundredth of a second.
So he, like, touched it and then immediately got off of it.
Exactly. Now I'm going to read to you the face mask rule. Okay. The face mask rule comes with a very, very important caveat. It says if a player grasps an opponent's face mask, he must immediately release it. If he does not immediately release it and controls his opponent, it is a foul.
Oh.
Right.
They never talk about that.
They never do they? How funny is that?
Huh.
Now, this was probably one of the most incidental face masks I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it was so quick. Vita Vea, basically, his hand slid down Prescott's face as he was going to tackle him, and his fingers just grabbed hold of the face mask real quickly, and then he released it immediately and sacked Prescott. No way on earth that should have been a face mask penalty.
Given that the release said the rule says if he does not immediately release it and controls his opponent.
Right.
So there's two factors there.
There's two factors. It's a very big thing with the face mask thing. You have to control it. If you grab a guy's face mask and you don't do anything, it's not face mask. You have to control his helmet, pull, twist, thing like that. You can grasp it all day long, but if you don't do anything, it's not face mask.
I had no idea that there was that caveat to the rule.
Yes. So this happened. This was a third down and, no, I'm sorry. It was first down, but it was close to the end zone. And that was first and 20. And this ended up moving them up to our 25. Okay. They were at our 35.
Okay.
This is
so it gave them 10 yards.
Yeah. Something. I can't remember. But it moved them up. They ended up scoring a touchdown. Whereas that sack would have pushed them basically out of field goal range.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it flipped the whole scoring dynamics there. And Vita Vea did a great job on this play. Just, it's infuriating. I mean, he just barely touched his face, man. Barely. You can't even, I sat here and I watched the live thing. You can't even see it. You can't even see it live. The only way you can see it is if you slow it down on, like, that's how fast it happened.
Yeah. And then that's what they did on the broadcast.
Yes, that's what they did on the broadcast. They slowed it down double so that you could see it. And it made it look a lot worse than it was.
Right. Interesting. Those little tricks that they do.
Little tricks, yeah. Who was in the booth? All Dallas people.
Right. Troy Aikman.
Troy Aikman, who got his head so far up Dallas's butt.
Yeah.
He can't. There ain't no breathing
like
going
he's
up.
Still on the team.
Okay, so let's move on. We're still in the first quarter. Still in the first quarter. 6 minutes, 35 seconds left in the first quarter. We got another bullshit holding call on 66 Jensen. I mean, he barely held the guy. If he did, I'm not even sure if he did.
Well, they look for him, too, given that he's the most. It was big news in the last few weeks that he's the most penalized offensive lineman.
Yeah, because of crap like this.
Right. They look for him. They know he's got a target on his back.
Yeah, he's one of those tough guys that they're trying to get rid of in the league, I think.
Yeah.
So. They're just slamming him. I mean, those two penalties he's gotten in the past few weeks for unnecessary roughness.
Yeah.
Well, man, those things infuriated me. I mean, he hits the guy before the whistle blows.
Right.
And it's a penalty? How is that possible?
Right.
These guys are supposed to play to the whistle. They're supposed to play to the whistle.
I mean, we complain about Donovan Smithstein and they're watching the play.
He's not getting no unnecessary roughness.
No, he's
penalties,
not.
That's for sure.
No. I mean, is that what we want Jensen to do? I don't.
That's what the league does, apparently. But in this one, this is another thing where you think, and I don't like to be a conspiracy theorist person. I mean, you know, I don't want to say, oh, they threw the game for Dallas. But, you know, after seeing how the refs did this game, how badly they called it for Dallas, I mean, it really hurt us. And then them double slowing down the face mask penalty. And then on this one, I couldn't see a holding. And a funny thing, they didn't show a replay of it.
Oh.
No, they showed some guys standing on the sideline.
Oh, I love when they do that.
I hate when they do that. It aggravates the hell out of me.
That was awesome.
And they sit there and they'll talk and talk and talk. And, you know, they'll be like, oh, it's a holding. You know, generally when there's a penalty on the field, they'll show a replay of it.
Yeah.
But a lot of times they don't.
Yeah.
And this was one of those times. And I'm like, they didn't show the replay because they went, there wasn't no holding there.
Well, sometimes they'll show the replay, and then the announcers will disagree with it. Rondé does that sometimes. So, yeah, I didn't see it there.
Yeah, well, they should disagree a lot more stringently. I mean, they should go off on these people. It's like they go off on players. I mean, if a player screws up, they'll be like, oh, he should have done. They should do the same thing with the refs. But everybody's scared.
Yeah.
You can't talk bad about the refs.
That's true. You get fined.
Right. Okay, now we're going to get to the big play. This is the one that everybody said was a turning point in the game. This is the one where Winston rolls out of the pocket. Donovan Smith's man hits him in the back. Winston fumbles the ball. They pick it up, run it in for a touchdown.
Okay.
Now, I've heard all kinds of blame put on this. People have blamed Donovan Smith. People have blamed Winston. People have blamed play calling. No, we can't blame any of those. This was Gregory. Yeah, it was Gregory, did a great job of hustling on this one. Donovan Smith blocked him as long as Donovan Smith really could. I mean, Donovan Smith, I guess, could have maybe ran over and tried to block him again. But, I mean, he blocked him all the way around the field.
And he's a big guy, right, Gregory? Like, he made Donovan Smith look small.
All their linemen look exactly the same. They have the same athletic body build, body type.
They're just huge.
The big, solid guys. I mean, they're not fat. None of them are fat.
Right. But they're all tall and just.
Yeah, they all look the exact same. If you can't tell the number differences, you couldn't tell the difference between any of the guys. And they all play the same, too. It's very interesting. But on this play, when it happened, I was like, something just doesn't look right about that play. But, you know, I just let it go and didn't think much about it. It wasn't Donovan Smith's fault. You know, he blocked a guy well, and he blocked him as long as he should have or could have. It wasn't Jameis Winston's fault either. Jameis Winston got out of the pocket and he was running up. And this was a fascinating play when I watched it. You see him motion for DeSean Jackson to go deep, you know, as Winston's leaving the pocket. And DeSean does. DeSean starts blazing down the field. DeSean Jackson is wide open down the field. And that's why Winston didn't run with the ball. He stopped at the line of scrimmage and was getting ready to throw it to DeSean Jackson. And he was going to have to wind up a bit, too, because it was a long bomb. And DeSean Jackson was wide. I mean, it was going to be a touchdown, no doubt about it.
Yeah, he was. DeSean Jackson was like 5 yards from the end zone, right, or something like that. And he was within the 10.
By that time, yes. Yeah. Yes. I mean, when Winston threw his arm out saying go deep, DeSean just put on the afterburners and just pew, because he was covered by two guys at that point.
Yeah.
And then he just took off. And he was wide open. It would have been a touchdown, no doubt about it. So anyhow, Jameis Winston's winding up to get ready to throw this ball, and here comes Gregory from behind him. Bam! Hits him. Fumble. Right?
Yeah.
Guy picks it up, runs it in for a touchdown. You think, bad play. You know, everybody starts blaming all this. No. Blame the refs, because here's what happened. The guy hit Winston in the neck and head.
Oh.
I took screenshots of this, and I'm going to put it up on the website. Winston is in a throwing position. And Gregory comes up from behind him and basically clotheslines him. And that is a foul. That is, these guys want to talk about player safety and all this crap. That is a fail. Foul. Now, Gregory does a good job of hustling. But according to the rules, you cannot hit a passer in the head or neck area, even if they are outside of the pocket.
Oh.
Now, Article 9, Section C says, in covering the passer position, referees will be particularly alert to fouls in which defenders impermissibly use the helmet and or face mask to hit the passer, or use hands, arms, or other body parts to hit the passer forcibly in the head or neck area.
Well, that's pretty clear.
Yes, he whacked Winston in the head. If you look at the screenshots, you can see Winston is in a perfect passing position. And then the next position, his head is off to the side. Gregory's got him in a, looks like a headlock.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, he blatantly hit him in the neck and head area. No wonder he dropped a dang ball.
Yeah.
I mean, he basically got sucker punched from the back.
In the neck.
In the neck. Now, you combine that with Article 9G, it says when the passer goes outside the pocket area and either continues moving with the ball without attempting to advance the ball as a runner, or throws while on the run, he loses the protection of the one-step rule provided for in the above, which basically says that a defender has to stop. They got one step before they can hit the quarterback. And the protection against a low hit provided for, but remains covered by all other special protections afforded to a passer in the pocket. Okay. You can't hit him in the head or neck area if he's a passer, even if he's outside the pocket. Gregory plainly hit him in the head or neck area.
Oh, and then it goes on. Keep reading it. If the passer steps behind the line and clearly establishes a passing posture, he will then be covered by all of the special protections for passers.
That's right. If he stops behind the line of scrimmage and goes into a passing position, which Winston did, it was very brief before Gregory hit him, but it was obvious he was getting ready to pass the ball.
Yeah.
Then you can't hit him low. You can't hit him in the head or neck area. You only got one step to hit him before, you know, after they release the ball. So all those protections apply. This was blatantly a foul that swung the game. I mean, they didn't call it. The defense scored a touchdown on it. I don't know if you can review those types of plays or anything, but I wish they could. New York should have looked at it and went, whoa, 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 this is a foul.
Yeah.
Heavy foul.
Which they review turnovers and scores anyway. So they didn't review it.
Right. They should have reviewed that and said, that's a foul.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look, he clubbed him right in the head.
Yeah.
And this play was just a complete enigma. I mean, all the offensive linemen except Jensen gets beat. But none of them was their fault. It was very strange. This was just a cascade of weird stuff happening. Dotson gets in the way of Benenock. Dotson pushes his guy into Marpet, allowing Marpet's man to escape. Jensen ended up blocking nobody until Winston leaves the pocket. And it was a good hustle by Winston to escape. It was just a case of bad stuff happening all around, but the worst thing that happened was the refs not calling the damn penalty on the quarterback getting clubbed in the head.
Yeah. Interesting. I haven't heard anyone bring up that point either.
No, everybody's just so focused on Cutter getting fired.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're at five. We're at five penalties that the refs just totally screwed up. So now let's get into the second quarter. First play of the second quarter. They called Dotson for holding, which, again, I didn't really see it. I replayed it from all different angles. Didn't really see it. But then they do absolutely nothing when number 99, Antoine Woods, pushes Winston hard enough to throw him off of his feet and back 5 yards after he threw the ball. I mean, the guy runs up to Winston. There's a one-step rule. You get, once the ball is out of the quarterback's hands, the defender's got one step before he has to avoid hitting the quarterback.
Okay. So if he's one step away and he's already going to hit the quarterback, he can still hit him.
Right. If he's okay. One step away.
Right. Okay.
But here's the rule. It says once a pass has been released by a passer, this is Article 9, Section A. Once a pass has been released by a passer, a rushing defender may make direct contact with the passer only up through the rusher's first step after such release, prior to the second foot hitting the ground.
Okay.
Thereafter, the rusher must be making an attempt to avoid contact and must not continue to drive through or otherwise forcibly contact the passer. Incidental or inadvertent contact by a player who is easing up or being blocked into the passer will not be considered significant.
So if they try to let up, try to avoid him, or if they're being pushed by an offensive lineman or whoever, then not a penalty.
Right, okay. Exactly. And if they're within one step after the ball is released and they hit the guy, hit the quarterback, the passer.
Well, now, see, I think they call more of that. I think they call a lot of that. When you're close to the passer and you hit them anyway, I think they still call that a lot.
Oh, yeah, they do. But they didn't hear. That's what I'm getting at. Dotson got called for holding, which I didn't see.
Right.
Right? Now, and then Antoine Woods, 99, runs up to Winston after he's thrown the ball and hits him so hard. I mean, he literally just pushes him, just picks him up off his feet and throws him. Threw him 5 yards.
Wow.
I mean, it was just violent.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't come and just slam into Winston, but he had 1 foot down, then 2 foot down, then he grabbed Winston and pushed him 5 yards.
So there was a grab, too.
I couldn't really tell, but he hit him hard enough to take him off his feet.
Right.
And Winston flew 5 yards. I mean, this wasn't just a little incidental shove.
Right.
I mean, it was obvious he shoved him, you know, and it was obvious he knew the ball was gone. It was obviously he didn't let up. And there's a ref standing right there. They throw this crap all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. But they didn't throw it on that one.
Right.
Come on. I mean, he literally left his feet. I've got a screen grab of him. His feet are in the air. He's going backwards. And they didn't call it. I just, you know, there's no consistency. And with the way this game was going, I'm sitting there going, are they really throwing this game? And I hate to say that because I just don't believe in those type of theories. But again, like I said, you know, refs are humans. You got 75,000 people. You got the nation watching. Nobody cares about the Bucks. We're a small market team. So, you know, they're going to hedge for the Cowboys all the time. And then in second quarter, 10:33, this is a few plays later. This is one where we do a play option and Winston gives the ball to Barber. Barber runs up to the line. Hole is blocked. So Barber comes back around. And Winston by this time is standing 5 yards downfield, acting like he had run with the ball, and Barber comes running on his side, and Winston goes to block for him. Well, Winston blocks a guy, and they call him for a block in the back. Of course, it's listed as illegal block above the waist, but it's called block in the back.
Okay.
And it was total BS. I mean, for one, he hits the guy in the side.
Okay.
All right? And two, even if it was a block in the back, it would be considered a close line play as defined in Section 7. It says, a close line play is contact that occurs in an area extending between the outside edges of the normal tackle positions and 3 yards on either side of the line of scrimmage.
In that square.
In that square rectangle. Okay, now in Article 3, Section B defines an illegal block above the waist as someone who blocks an opponent from behind, in the back, above the opponent's waist, or uses his hands or arms to push an opponent from behind in a manner that affects his movement, except in close line play.
Whoa.
Winston was in the tackle box. He was right up on the line of scrimmage when he did this, and he didn't even hit the guy in the back.
Interesting. You spent a lot of time reading the rule book, huh?
I had to with this craziness. Ugh. So, okay, so now we're up to 7 plays, and these plays have had a huge impact on the game.
Oh, yeah. That fumble alone.
The fumble alone, yeah. And that's the one that everybody points to as the reason why the Bucks suck.
Yeah.
It wasn't us.
Yeah.
Okay, second quarter, 4:01 left. 86, Dalton Schultz, who's a rookie, he holds JP and actually drags him to the ground. Plainly obvious. It was right there on the edge. Anybody could see it that was looking. And, of course, Ezekiel Elliott runs right by him. If he wouldn't have been held, JPP would have made the tackle.
Oh.
I'm not going to do the Dallas's bad calls.
Forget them.
Yeah. Fourth quarter, 7:57 left. Humphreys was grabbed and held by number 27 in the end zone as he was cutting across. He would have been wide open had he not been held, and Winston ended up running but came up 1 yard short on the fourth down. This was that huge play.
Is that one where we were called for delay of game. We were on the – we needed one. It was 4th and 1.
Yes.
We needed one.
This was right after the delay of game.
Okay, so delay of game happens. It becomes 4th and 6. Everyone's in a tizzy because –
4th and 7. Winston actually got 6, I think.
Okay. So he
– No, it's 4th and 6 on the Dallas 7.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So 4th and 6, Winston, he doesn't have anybody open, and then he runs for 5.
Yeah.
And then we still need a yard. He comes up a yard short.
Right.
And everyone's in a tizzy because they're saying it's bad coaching. Cutter should have called the timeout, and they had addressed it with Cutter, and everyone thinks that this is a bad coaching by him. Where Cutter said, basically, you know, we didn't really – I saw the – clock winding down. I didn't want to burn a timeout. We do better with a little bit of room.
Right.
So the extra 5 yards maybe would have given us some room.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He said that they had called a passing play and that 5 yards would have actually made the passing play more work better. If they would have called a running play, he would have called a timeout.
Yeah.
But he said he knew he was going to need the timeouts later. So actually moving back 5 yards was not a big deal because the way the routes were on that passing play, it worked out better for them. They needed the space. And it was Winston's fault, though. I mean, he said that, you know, he thought Winston was going to get the ball off in time.
Yeah.
And Winston and Jensen were calling offensive line protection, and they got caught up in it and just totally lost track. So it was Winston's fault, but Cutter still could have called the timeout.
Okay.
But he chose not to.
Right.
Right. Okay. But Winston was the one that made the mistake of letting the clock go. He was just he wasn't paying attention to the clock. But anyhow, on this play, I don't know if you remember a couple years ago, we had a play like this where we stopped somebody on a 4th and goal, and it was I want to say it was New Orleans. They had a guy running across the field, and we had a guy just reach out and barely touch him, and they called him for pass interference, and it gave them the ball on to – anyhow, it's happened to us before where we've gotten this BS call. Well, this time, Humphreys is running across the end zone. I mean, he's running down the field. And 27 reaches out and grabs him, totally stops his motion, and actually spins him around a little bit. And Humphreys was going to be wide open. And he eventually does get wide open after he breaks free with this guy.
Yeah.
But this happened right in the end zone. And Winston was looking for him. I mean, that was the go-to route.
Oh.
Yeah.
And a pass interference in the end zone would have given us the ball at the 1-yard line.
Ball on the 1,
line.
And it would have been a first down. We would have had 4 shots into the end zone. Yeah, and it was a blatant hold. I mean, it changed his direction, Humphrey's direction. When you see it, you go, how did they not see that? And there was a referee standing 5 yards away. And I swear he was looking right at it.
At a minimum, okay, within the 5-yard line, you can make contact with the receiver, but you can't grab them.
Right.
Like, even within 5 yards, it's a holding.
Yes.
It's not a pass interference.
Right.
Beyond 5 yards, it becomes pass interference.
Yeah, and you can't do it in the end zone at all.
Right.
And this wasn't even within 5 yards, even if you counted the end zone as something you could grab in. Yeah, he comes running by. He's running, and the guy just reaches out and grabs him and actually twists him around, and you see him have to slow down. And that's why Winston had to run.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a pretty substantial non-call.
Mm-hmm.
And then fourth quarter, 5:50 left. JPP's held by 86, keeping JPP from attacking the runner. So now we're up to 10 and number 11. This is the last one. This is the last play. This is the one where Elliott ran and got the first down, and then they could just run out the clock after that. 85 held 39, allowing Elliott to get to the outside. I mean, it was BS, complete BS. And this ended the game because Elliott got a first down. Dallas can run out the clock. Devontae Harris had an open field tackle opportunity on Elliott, but Elliott beat him to the outside. And it seemed like Harris was a tad bit hesitant, like he didn't even know that the getting a first down was going to end the game, basically.
Oh.
You know, so he kind of like boxed him instead of attacking him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really cost the game. But the thing of it is that 39 was coming in on a blitz, a run blitz, to specifically tackle Elliott. And 85 held him. And it allowed Elliott to get to the outside and win the game. So we had penalty after penalty after penalty that changed the course of this game. And this one actually let them win the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, any one of those in a vacuum maybe would be kind of a hit to morale, but maybe wouldn't change the course of the game. But when you have 11 of those, that's a lot.
That's a lot. That's huge. And these were significant.
And that's like three a quarter.
Yes. Yeah, it was really horrible. Refs did a horrible, horrible job, and they need to be punished. But, you know, we were still in it. We were still in this game. You know, Dallas didn't do anything to stop us. I mean, offensively, we just marched down the field every time. Dallas ended up getting short field positions. They had the defense score. But other than that, they didn't do anything. I mean, they couldn't run against us. They couldn't pass effectively. Our secondary did a great job with shutting down their receivers. And Vita Vea did a great job of just shutting everything down. I'm going to talk about him in a minute. I got a lot to say about him. But our offense moved the ball very effectively, very, very effectively against their defense.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many punts we had, but all I can think of right now is one.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, we'd get the ball, we'd just move it right down the field. We'd get the ball, we'd just move it right down the field. And we didn't have three and outs, I don't think.
We really haven't had that problem all season, though.
No.
I mean, we can get the yards, it's just we can't get the scores.
Get the scores.
That's the problem.
Right. Our offensive line, I did not realize how good Dallas's defensive line was until I watched the All-22. Those guys are good. I mean, like I said, they're big, they're athletic, they're relentless, their motors don't stop. This is all of them. It's all seven of them. They rotate guys in and out just like we do, but these guys, they all look the same, they all play the same, and they're very chaotic. I mean, they just make the line a mess.
And I just want to point out that I said this in the New Orleans preview. I said Dallas controlled the line of scrimmage.
Yes, and you were correct.
Yes.
They've got a very good front seven.
I know some things.
Yeah, their linebackers are great, too. That
Van Der Esch
and Smith, Lindahl Smith, they're really, really good.
Yeah.
But our offensive line, as usual, didn't play that well. But they didn't play that bad, either, considering. Let's go down the list. Dotson had 5 bad plays, but he had 2 good plays. A really weird thing's happening with Dotson, I've noticed. And he's playing like a man who's not caring about anything but not losing his job. He is pushing guys left and right. He's pushing them into Beninok and Kappa. It's like he doesn't care. He's not playing to.
He's not playing for the team. He's playing
right,
for Dotson.
Right. He's playing, and he made that comment.
Yeah.
Somebody asked him.
I'm not worried about anyone else's job but my own.
Right. When they asked about if he was playing for Cutter.
Yeah.
Like, I ain't worried about Cutter. I'm worried about my own job. And there was a lot of that during this game where he would actually knock Kappa or Beninok. You know, really screw them over by throwing his guy into them. You know, because when they play these zone blocking schemes, they pass guys off to each other. Dotson wasn't passing. He was throwing. And he would throw them right into them and knock them down or knock them off balance or whatever. And Dotson just didn't seem to care.
Maybe Beninok, you know, how long has this been happening? Is that the reason Beninok's kind of getting a bad rap?
I don't really have anything bad to say about Beninok or Kappa. Actually, I'm starting to like both of them. Kappa, I'm really liking. I'll get to that here in a second. But Dotson did have 2 good plays. So, you know, he balanced out.
Yeah.
Donovan Smith, on the other hand, 10 bad plays. That's about normal for him. I think we talked about
this. I mean, and no one's shocked by that.
No one's shocked. And he had 0 good plays.
And for him to ask for top tackle money.
We can't do it. We just can't do it.
Please go somewhere else and get it.
We can't do it.
You're going to get top tackle money. Bye-bye.
That's why if I could talk to the Glazers or send them an email or something, which I'm going to look into doing. I was actually thinking about calling
Brian Ford.
Brian Ford,
oh,
our buddy.
Goodness.
and say, hey, man, I got to say something to these guys. Let me know. But one thing I would say was, you know, our team is really, really good. We got really good players all across the board. We got good coaches. But do not re-sign Donovan Smith. Do not re-sign Brent Grimes.
Oh, he's terrible. I think he'll retire anyway.
Yeah, he's going to.
He doesn't want to be there. He's kind of DeSean Jackson on the defense.
Right.
He don't want to be there.
And I hate that because, you know, I like Donovan Smith as a person, but he is the weak link on our thing. Especially when you watch, man, I watch Tyron Smith. He's the left tackle for Dallas. Good God. What a beast. Nobody did anything to him. Except one person.
Oh, who was
I'll get
it?
To that.
Tell me who it was.
It's Vita Vea.
Okay.
I'll get to that though, man. I mean, nobody. He just destroyed everybody. Nassib, did you hear Nassib's name?
Nassib,
I'm sorry.
Whatever his name is. The guy. Carl. Let's just call him Carl.
Carl.
Everybody knows who that is.
Yeah, did you hear his name during the whole game?
No.
Right. I mean, he had a couple good plays, but none of them were against Tyron Smith. Tyron Smith just put him in the dirt every play.
Ooh.
And I mean, it's just... Nobody could do anything against him. And I'm watching him, and I'm watching Donovan Smith. And I'm like, God, there's a world of difference. But anyhow, Tyron Smith is, you know, he's a top three left tackle. I mean, he's really, really good. And he's declined a little bit, but, you know, still. I mean, nobody on our team. JPP didn't go against him once. JPP usually plays on that side. He played on the opposite side the whole game. He put Nassib over there.
Well, he's used to playing against Dallas.
Exactly.
He knew what he was going
he
up against.
He knew what he was getting into, and he said, I am not going up against that guy. Because he just shut everybody down. Except there. I'll get to that in a minute. So anyhow, watching him and then watching Donovan Smith give up 10 bad plays, no good plays. He didn't pancake anybody. He didn't do any double stuff. And he's just not that
he's
good.
He's so apathetic.
He really is. He doesn't play with energy or
no.
Umph. Yeah.
I don't even feel like he likes football.
You get that impression.
Right?
Yeah. He's definitely not a tough guy. Marpet, worst game I've seen him. He had 6 bad plays,
ooh,
1 good play. Yeah. It was so funny. He did one of the defensive linemen did a spin move on him and he handled it perfectly. And I was like, I'm going to make a video clip of that. That's exactly how you handle a spin move. He didn't panic. It was perfect. And then like 6 plays later, guy does a spin move on him, blows him out of the water. Marpet gets lost. I was like, oops, spoke too soon. But yeah, this was probably the worst game Marpet's had all season, but it really wasn't Marpet. That's just how good
that
defensive line is. Yeah. Marpet got blown up one time. I've never seen Marpet get beat this bad. I mean, Marpet puts his hands up and his weights forward. Guy just smacks his hands down. Marpet almost goes to the ground. The guy just like basically strolls right past Marpet.
Oh, no.
It's really bad. Jensen, 4 bad plays, 1 good play. Kappa. Now, they rotated Kappa and Benenock. They didn't do it by quarter. They did it by series this time. It was kind of strange.
Interesting.
Yeah. But Kappa only had 2 bad plays and 1 good play. So, you know, that balanced out pretty good.
But I wonder what his time in possession was.
Yeah, how often he was out there. He was out there about half the time.
Okay.
Yeah. But I really like him.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's a scrappy little dude, man. He's got the little long hair and stuff. And he gets out there and he plays. I mean, he keeps his head on a swivel. And if you get near him, he's going to hit you.
Interesting.
Yeah. He took, in the fourth quarter, 14:55 left. So start of the fourth quarter. He's fighting with number 90. I think that was Lawrence. And ends up taking him to the ground, just throws him to the ground. Boom. Right. That was pretty impressive to begin with. But this was after he was blocking him. You know, they were blocking for a while. And then he just grabs him, throws him to the ground. And then Vander Esch tackles, hits Barber. Barber gets a check down pass. Vander Esch hits Barber, and they're like close to Kappa. So Kappa kind of runs over there and just pushes 55. I mean, just shoves him. There really wasn't no need to do it. He was just doing it to be kind of a scrappy little dude. You know, and then he pushes him, and then, they get in each other's face and everything. And I love to see that with linemen. You see it with Jensen all the time. But Howley was the best at that. He would just get him. He would just aggravate people.
Oh, with the beard?
Yeah, with the beard.
Okay.
I mean, he would like stick his finger in their helmet all as they were walking by. He was always just messing with people, and they get so pissed at him. So, yeah, I like Kappa.
That's interesting. He's a nice compliment to Jensen right over on that side, maybe.
Yeah, two scrappy dudes.
Yeah.
And Benenock was, you know, last week he was getting scrappy like that too. And, you know, he had two bad plays during this game, didn't have any good plays. And when I say not good plays, I mean outstanding plays. I mean, he blocked everybody he was supposed to block most of the time.
Right.
Only twice did he get beat. So
that's not bad.
Yeah. So our offensive line, considering, they didn't play that bad. Donovan Smith played his usual game, but, you know, everybody else. Marpet had his worst game of his season, but it was just a testament to Dallas's defensive front. And they don't blitz a lot. They don't, you know, it's mainly just their front four just going at it. And those guys are relentless. They don't stop. And they like to create chaos up there. Now, let's get into what I really want to talk about. Vita Vea. I had so much fun watching him. This game, I said it at the beginning of the year when I was first watching him. I was like, this guy's really good. I mean, when he gets his feet underneath him and gets his football sense, he's going to be a powerful force.
And I just want to point out that Ralph said this in his inner podcast, and it's the same time that everyone else was calling Vita a bust.
Yes. Yeah, I was listening, you know, when Ian Beckles and Warren Sapp were talking about the worst defensive tackle they've ever seen, everything. I was like, are we watching the same? I mean, yeah, he's making mistakes and he's not seeing the field and getting off his blocks. You know, they were calling him Velcro Vea, which it made sense and all that, but they were really coming down on him. I was like, no, he just hasn't got up to speed to the NFL yet. I mean, he didn't have any preseason. He missed the first, three or four games, you know, and this is his first time in the NFL. So, you know, man, I tell you what, this is why I say we need to keep light on staff. This pick right here alone is worth every bad pick and thing that Light has ever done. Vita Vea, and I'm hesitant to say this, but I don't know if Warren Sapp was this good.
Whoa. That's a bold statement there, Con.
It really is. And but watching this guy, and this is Dallas's offensive line. These guys are top 10.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at their pass, all that stuff, but the Dallas has always had a good offensive line. And these guys, if you look, JPP didn't get anything. Gerald McCoy didn't get anything. Nasib didn't get anything. Bo didn't get anything. Goldstein didn't get anything. I mean, these guys were not getting penetration. We were not getting. But Vea, every down, they can't stop him. You cannot stop him. Even double teaming him does not stop him. It is the craziest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen a player like this. I mean, Aaron Donald is the closest I could come to where you go, that's just somebody you can't stop. He's going to get there. But Vea gets there through sheer power. You know, Donald gets there through, you know, being strong, but he's wily and crafty too. Vea doesn't, he throws all that crap out the window. He just lines up with you and he says, I'm going to take you and I'm going to pick you up and I'm going to throw you at the quarterback. Basically what he says, they couldn't stop him. When you're one-on-one with him, you've got 3 seconds. A quarterback has 3 seconds. That's it. He's going to get to the quarterback in 3 seconds on a one-on-one.
Wow. Just brute force.
Just brute force. Just bull rushing. Just pushing the guy back. I can't tell you how many times I saw him just push the guys back into the quarterback. They can't stop him. Nobody can stop him. And double-teaming him is not effective. He doesn't move. I mean, I saw him get hit from the side. I mean, sometimes these linemen will hit players from the side with a lot of force and, you know, throw them off their feet. It happens to McCoy quite a bit, actually. Happened to him a couple times in this game. But Vea doesn't budge. He doesn't move. They can't move him. I've watched Gerald McCoy get double teamed for years and they just move him right out of the way. I've watched McDonald get double teamed, moved right out of the way. I haven't seen anybody move Vea out of the way.
Is it just, I mean, he's a big guy, but there's bigger guys.
He's incredibly strong. I don't think it's fat at all. It's all muscle. It's got to be. I mean, just the strength he has. There was a couple of games at the beginning of the season where I was like, man, he goes on the ground too much, you know, but he was tripping over people and he, you know, wasn't keeping his head on a swivel and all that. Now, I actually have seen where he will get double teamed and a guy will come in from the side to hit him. That guy will basically bounce off of him and fall down. And Vea won't move. It is craziness. And Vea will take two guys and push them back. A double team is not a guarantee with Vea. It is crazy. And I'm seeing these offensive linemen panic. I mean, they're panicking because they can't stop this guy.
Wow.
If you watch this game, Prescott had to get the ball out quick almost every time he went back to throw. And it was solely 100% because of Vea. Nobody else was getting near him.
Wow.
But Vea would just, he would just take his guys and he would just push them straight back or throw them down or whatever.
Yeah, I think the one sack he got credited for that wasn't taken away from him because of the penalty, he actually brought an offensive lineman with him
to sack the quarterback. Yeah, that's what he does. I mean, it's like, it's like they're not even there, really. He just carries them with him or push them back. There was one, this is the one I was talking about, Tyrone Smith. Now, Tyrone Smith has shut everybody down. I mean, every single defensive lineman we threw at him, he shut down. Just completely shut down. Nobody got past him. They didn't even get close to getting
past him. I mean, and he's huge, too. He's like a King Dunlap size.
Yeah, he made Nasib look small and weak and insignificant. He actually pushed Nasib one time, just pushed him out of the way. And Nasib left his feet and went 5 yards in the air.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It was kind of embarrassing, but I'll tell you what, Nasib did not quit. He kept trying, man. He wanted to beat that guy, but he just couldn't do it. But nobody could beat him except Vita Vea. Vita Vea did a twist or a stunt, whatever you want to call it, which he does every now and then, but generally he just goes straight forward. And he came around the corner and squared off with Tyrone Smith. Now, he did not catch Tyrone Smith off guard. He did not catch him off balance. Those two saw each other, and they squared up. Vita Vea hit him. Now, this guy is huge, and he's one of the top, I'd say top three left tackles in the league. And the way he just shut down everybody on our defensive line is testament to it. Those two collided. And Vita Vea pushed him back like he didn't even exist. Pushed him completely. Pushed him 5 yards back right into Prescott, causing Prescott to throw a bad pass. Then Vea swung around the corner. I mean,
he had time to run around the defensive end. Right.
That's how fast. I mean, Vea's not a slow guy. He's not like super fast. He's not going to beat you in a 40.
350 pounds. How fast can you be?
Right. But he doesn't stop. I mean, he's got a motor. He's very consistent. I mean, he doesn't like hit you and then y'all struggle to see who's going to die. No, he hits you and he keeps going forward. You just happen to be a passenger now, you know, and it's incredible. And he chases guys down from the back and the guy is incredibly good. I mean, this is a 5-star draft. This guy is going to be a game changer for years to come. I mean, he changed this game. He is the reason why Prescott or Elliott couldn't run. He's the reason why Prescott couldn't pass the ball. He was the total. He was the defense.
Wow.
Nobody else did anything. There were a few plays here and there, but consistently, no. Vea was the only one doing anything.
How long has it been since we've had a player like
that? Warren Sapp. This type of dominance, I haven't seen since Warren.
And it just goes to show one player can make the defense.
There was a small dig. But yeah, he pushes Tyrone Smith straight back. And this wasn't a Tyrone Smith being off balance or catching him by surprise. They both saw each other. They both went right at each other. Tyrone Smith planted his feet. And you couldn't see Tyrone Smith's face, but you know it had to have just been like, what the F? Because he just pushed him straight back like he didn't even exist. Pushed him right into Prescott. It was an incredible, incredible feat of strength. And he did this all game. And he did this all game. He did it to every single lineman he faced. You know, no matter who they were, he would just get you and put you have 3 seconds with Vea. That's it. You have 3 seconds. Unless you double team him, and then it might be 4 seconds.
Okay. Wow.
I was so excited watching this. I just kept waiting for the next play, and just every time I'm like, ooh, what's he gonna do this time? Who's he gonna throw down? There was one time Prescott was in a shotgun formation. So, you know, he's standing back 5 yards from the center. You know, he's not having to step back or anything. Okay. He's already back.
He's got some space.
Right. He's got some space. Vea pushes 76, Suofilo.
Oh, this is the one I was talking about.
Was it?
Is it the sack?
No.
Okay.
No. Well, yeah, it was a sack. He got 2 sacks, but one was the face mask sack.
Yeah, so this is the sack that he got.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, he pushes him straight back, just pushes him right in it. In 3.09 seconds, he got to Prescott with 76, see, of carrying him, basically. He basically carried him.
Well, what's that going to do? If you have 3 seconds, we're in a division with Drew Brees and Matt Ryan who get the ball off really quickly.
They're going to completely have to adjust all their routes. I mean, they're not going to be able to get no long routes anymore.
I know, but don't they get the ball out in faster than 3 seconds? both of those?
Matt Ryan will, he kind of...
He'll let it wind up.
Yeah, he'll get some long routes going. But Drew Brees is very, very fast. I mean, he does a short dink and dunk. So Vea's not going to have as much impact on him. But he's going to be a force. You can't run against him. I can't tell you how many times they try to run in the middle. And Vea has gotten that thing that we complained about before where he would engage with a blocker, push him back, and then the running back would run right past him. Yeah, that don't happen anymore. Vea will grab the blocker, and you can see him look side to side to see where the runner's going. And then when he decides which way the runner's going, he just throws the blocker off and tackles the runner. You can't run up the middle on us anymore.
Wow.
With him. You can't do it.
So he kind of like lets them block him for a minute, and then he gets...
Yeah, he stands them up.
Yeah.
Just to see which way the runner's going. And if they're within 5 yards of Vea, he'll just throw the blocker to the side and tackle the runner. And he seems to like, when he's getting double teamed, to throw one of them to the ground. He seems to really enjoy that. And you could just see the panic in these guys' faces. They don't know what to do with him. They can't do anything with him. You can't leave a running back in to chip him because it'll hurt the runner. I mean, the running back hits this guy, he's going to probably break his neck or something.
And fun fact, we looked up where Vita is from. Looked at his wiki.
Yes, we thought it was Samoan.
Okay, so his name is about 50 characters long. There's about 12 apostrophes. Vita Vea is the short form.
Yeah, it's very short.
But he's from Tonga, and it's a little island off of Samoa. So
yeah, it's close to Samoa.
In the Pacific.
Tonga. He's Tonganese.
Yeah, and his parents are American immigrants from Tonga.
What if he was born here? Yeah, he was. We saw that. Was it Philadelphia? Nah.
I don't know.
Can't remember.
So anyway, yes. Yeah. So, kind of he's Samoan. Tongan. It was probably a Samoan that went out into a boat and washed up on a desert island, and that's how they populated Tonga.
There was an interesting one. Third quarter, 10:07. McCoy gets thrown to the ground by 76, Suafilo. It looked like McCoy's feet might have gotten tripped up on another lineman, though. But anyhow, Vita Vea grabs 70. And he like a rag doll. Seriously, like a rag doll. He grabs hold of him and shakes him from left to right. And it looked like he was getting ready to toss him. I mean, it's violent. It's he grabs hold of the guy. He grabs hold of number 70. And he moves him left and moves him right. Then moves him left. And it's a violent. You see the guy's head going. It looked like a rag doll. And he's getting ready to, like, toss him.
Yeah.
And then another lineman comes over and, like, gets in his way so he couldn't. Yeah. So it was just like, I was like, wow, I've never seen that before.
Okay. So I have a question with that. Since you've reviewed the rule book, The defensive linemen, can they grab offensive linemen? Because if offensive linemen grab defensive linemen, that's a hold. Right?
You can grab them. As long as you keep on the inside of their shoulders, you can't go on the outside. You can't grab them like this, but you can grab them like this. Okay. And it's only a certain way. You can't grab and
grab?
If they're trying to get away, you can't pull, but you can grab, you can grip and move them.
So like their jersey, you can grab to move them.
Yeah. You can like grab the, we'd have to look at the rule book to get the specific technicalities of the holding. But yeah, Vea was, he's just a dominant force. Like I said, it's a small sample size now, but I'm going to put him up there with the level of Warren Sapp.
Wow.
Yeah. When he wasn't in, he wasn't in for five plays. He's getting to where he's playing a larger percentage of the downs than previously. He was in a lot during this game, but there was a five-play series where he wasn't in, and it was Dallas's best five plays of the whole game. They got 13, 4, 12, 6, and 7 yards.
Wow.
In those five plays. Vea comes back in, and they got 0, negative 7, and then 8 yards, and then a field goal.
Wow.
So they got a net of 1 yard in 3 plays with Vea in. He's just a dominant force, and he's a game changer. I don't care what you say bad about Light. You could pull up all, you could, every single draft pick, he could have picked 15 Agoyos, whatever his name was. And this Vita Vea makes up for all of it. I mean, this guy is going to change football. He's going to make our defense a dominant defense for years to come.
Hope we keep him.
That's why I'm saying I really want this. I want the team and I want the coaches to all stay together. We are right there. We are right there. We had some issues, but it was our issues. It's stuff. It's things that we can correct. One of the biggest issues was Jameis Winston. He did not have his best game here. I mean, he didn't play bad per se, but he missed seeing open receivers 9 times in this game. That's a huge amount.
When you showed me one, there was one play. He had 3 open receivers down the field within the 20-yard line, and he threw it to the one receiver that was double covered.
You're right. Yeah. He did that quite a bit. I don't know if he's gotten scared or if he's anxious or whatever, but I mean, he goes to the, and people say consistency is a big problem with Winston. And they're right. He can't be consistent in his attitude. I mean, he wants to win and you got to respect that. But, you know, sometimes he'll be a gunslinger. Sometimes he'll be a check down artist. Sometimes he'll be a running quarterback. You know, sometimes he'll just be a doofus. You know, there's just so many things. But on this one, he just couldn't see the field. And this is my biggest knock on Winston is he does not see the field well. He's gotten better, but this game was a regression. Like I said, 9 times. And most of those 4 were for huge plays and touchdowns.
Really could have been game changers, huh?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we didn't have a problem moving the ball down the field, and he checked down good, but we could have really torched them really, really bad if Winston could have seen the field.
And the few games that he played well during the season, it was he played a complete game. He was decisive.
Yes.
Those were the words used to describe him.
Yes.
So how was this different? Was he indecisive? Was he just making bad decisions?
Making bad decisions. They weren't fatal decisions.
Yeah.
But he wasn't making the best decisions.
Okay.
For instance, the play you were referring to, second quarter, 9:19, no, 10:07 left. He throws it to Godwin, who's covered deep. I mean, Godwin's guy was blanketing. He was the only receiver that was being covered. There were 4 other open receivers. They were wide open receivers in the field. Winston didn't even bother to look. He just threw it up for Godwin. Very strange. He did the same thing in the second quarter, 39 seconds left. He throws it to Michael Evans when he was covered, and he had an open Humphreys in the end zone. Humphreys standing there with his arms up, going, "I'm wide open." There was nobody near him in the end zone.
And you could kind of see where Deshaun Jackson might get frustrated with him.
Oh, yeah. With this game, every single receiver, I bet, was extremely frustrated with Winston. Because he just was not seeing the field. Another couple plays later, 32, Rodgers was wide open for a check down that and might would have possibly run it in for a touchdown that we were on Dallas's 6. And but Winston decides to run, and he didn't need to. And instead, he got to the 2. Now, Rodgers would have gotten at least that far, but most likely he would have gotten an end zone. And Winston did this really strange bunny hop thing at the end. It was really weird. He like jumped in the air when he was getting ready to be tackled and landed on both feet. You know, he like hopped. It was really strange. I don't know what it was about. He does some weird stuff. But he didn't need to run. It was a bad decision. He put himself in danger. He didn't get as much yardage as he could have if he would have just thrown it to just check down Rodgers. You know, and it wasn't like he was being pressured or anything. Just a bad decision. Third quarter, 10:56 left to go. It's 2nd and 18. Winston throws deep to a covered Evans on the left sideline. Now, he had a man wide open for a 5-yard pass underneath in the middle who would have probably run for another 5 yards. But it just seems like Winston was doing that a lot. He was throwing covered receivers when he had open receivers, you know. And this one, it was a 5-yard check down, but the guy would have probably gotten another 5 yards. There was nobody near him. So that would have been 10 yards, 2nd and 8. So that would have made it 3rd and 8.
Yeah.
Instead of the next play, it's 3rd and 18 because he decides to try to throw it to Evans, who was completely covered.
just don't understand it. And then the very next play, again, Winston has a dude open 5 yards in the middle, nobody near him for possible yards after the catch. But instead, he throws an incomplete pass to a receiver 10 yards downfield on the far right. It was a way much longer for the ball to travel and hardly any chance for yards after the catch, even if the guy did catch it. And Winston threw a bad pass. So it was just like, why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense.
And where's this coming from? Like, I think the whole team is really defined by inconsistency this year.
Yeah, I can go with that.
You know.
Yes. Well, Donovan Smith is consistently bad. I haven't had a game yet where he's not had, more than a handful of bad plays.
Well, there we go. Yeah. We got one consistent player.
Fourth quarter, 14:25 left. The score is 13-27. It's a 1st and 10. DeSean Jackson is wide open down the field, 20 yards down the field. And so was Mike Evans. Both of them were wide open, 20 yards down the field. And Winston had a clean pocket, and he throws a check down for 4 yards. I just didn't understand that one. He's not seeing the field. He's zoning in on players, or he's going down his progressions and not paying attention to what's really happening on the field. It's just, I think he's panicking. I think he's really worried about Cutter losing his job. He's worried about him losing his job. He's wanting to be really good, and he's not calm. He needs to calm down.
He's putting a lot of pressure on himself. He feels a lot of pressure.
Well, he gets a lot of pressure physically from, this offensive line, but
especially Donovan Smith's side.
Especially Donovan Smith's side. After that fumble, getting hit in the head and fumbling the ball, it seemed like after that, Winston was just a mess. He wasn't horrible, but he wasn't making good decisions. And he might have had a concussion for all we know. Right. He got hit pretty hard in the head. Referees.
Player safety,
yeah. So, it might have just discombobulated, made him worried. He was worried about getting hit from behind. I don't know. He just didn't feel comfortable. Fourth quarter, 11:05. Humphreys is wide open, 15 yards downfield with nobody between him and the end zone. But Winston throws a 4-yard check down to break. Just didn't see Humphreys. It was a touchdown he missed. Very next play, Evans is open 15 yards down the right sideline for most likely a touchdown. He didn't have anybody between him and the end zone. But for some reason, Winston ran and got 5 yards. Don't know why he ran. He wasn't being pressured. Just bad decisions. And then the last one, fourth quarter, 2:35 left to go. Here we are. We're down 13-27. This is right before we score a touchdown, though, so it's not really that bad of a day. And he got a 25-yard completion on this play to an open receiver in the middle of the field. But he had Evans open on the right side for a touchdown. Mm. Evans was wide open, and it would have been a touchdown most likely. Well, Evans is kind of slow. They might have been able to catch up to him. we ended up scoring a touchdown right after that. But Winston needs to, just calm down, man. Just start seeing the field. Start looking. Look at all your receivers, man. Don't just focus on one or two.
How do you even coach that?
Don't know. I just show him the game film.
Yeah.
I say, look what you're missing, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a good quarterback. You could hit this guy. He's right. Wide open, 30 yards downfield.
Take advantage of those opportunities. I think that's what good quarterbacks do.
Yes.
Elite quarterbacks.
The elite guys. Drew Brees, Matt Ryans, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. I mean, you fall down covering a receiver with those guys, they're throwing it there.
Yeah.
They're not going through their progressions or locking in on one receiver. They get a guy open, they're getting the ball. But he also had that delay of game penalty, too, which is very strange. I mean, he's right there at the end zone. The time clock is right there.
Right.
I don't know. He might have been groggy, to be honest with you. I mean, he did get hit pretty hard for that fumble, right in the head. Refs. a couple of little notes I want to put out. Beninock, Barber had a 33-yard run. It was called back on a stupid holding penalty, but Beninock run down the field all the way down there and picked him up off the ground and congratulated him. And he was just like really excited. I mean, aww. It was genuine excitement. And I'd love to see that. I felt so bad for him when they called it back. I was like, dang, Beninock was all happy about that one. And another thing with Barber, and I've noticed this, throughout the year. He doesn't avoid tacklers. He actually runs into tacklers. There's a couple times in this one where he could have gone left or right and avoided a tackle, but instead he put his shoulder down, went into the tackler.
And he's not the type of runner that can run through a guy.
Yeah, he's not a big
bruiser.
That's
the thing. He's not a big bruiser. He's not an Adrian Peterson. He's not a scrappy,
no,
scrappy runner.
Right. I mean, he's tough, you know, and he can,
yeah,
he can break some tackles, but, you know, he's not going to consistently run over guys bigger than him.
No.
But that's what he does. He just doesn't seem to try to avoid the tackler. He wants to do it. I do this in pool. When I've got a good shot that I know I could make, I love to just slam it. And probably a good 25% of the time, I hit it too hard. It bounces off the rails or something, or bounces out of the pocket or whatever. But there's just something about hitting that ball and having it go wham right in that pocket, you know. And it's dumb, you know, because you can't control the cue ball with the leave as much as you can if you hit it soft with good English and everything. But there's just something about it. You just want that slam. It intimidates your opponent. It makes you feel good. And I think that's what it is with him. He gets out in the open field or whatever, and he's got a defender there trying to tackle him, and he just wants to plow over top of him, you know, just hit him and go, instead of doing the right thing, which is, you know, just juke him out and go left or right and get another 3 or 4 more yards.
Yeah.
Or however many he can get. So that's a knock I have on Barber. But here's one thing I got to say about Barber and Rodgers. I hear people knock on Rodgers all the time. Rodgers is a fantastic blocking running back, and he's great at catching the ball. I mean, he did great in this game, but Winston checked down to him, especially in the fourth quarter. I'd say 40% of the passes Winston threw in the fourth quarter were to Rodgers on checkdowns. But his pass protection is stellar, and Barber's is good too. I mean, they're great pass protections. Nobody gives them the credit for that. And that's a huge thing with runners. And something else I've noticed is that our defenders are now getting off of blocks and avoiding blocks.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. It's been the past couple weeks I've seen it. Actually, I saw Levante David back to Levante David form in this game.
Whoa.
He was avoiding blockers, and he was weaving in and out traffic, you know, and shedding blockers. He did one the fourth quarter, 451. He got a great tackle for a loss. He just weaved in and out all the offensive linemen and everything and zipped around. I mean, they were blocking everybody. They had a hat on a hat everywhere across the line. They were so proud of themselves. I know they were. And that runner, Elliot, it looked like he was getting ready to go for a huge, a big wide open hole. David come in. He zigzagged through those offensive linemen and just tackled the runner in the backfield for a loss. I was like, yes, that's the Devontae David I know. So, anyhow, I really don't want them to fire these coaches because we have a good team.
It's just the unknown, and then it's like, come on, we're doing this again.
Yeah, we're going to lose all this. We're going to lose, you know. We've got a good team. There's not a defense in the league that can stop us offensively. And now with Vita Vea getting up on his game and our defenders getting off of blocks – you know, and they're tackling better.
I mean, they're improving little by little.
Right. We basically shut Dallas's offense down. They couldn't move the ball down the field. They got all their scores from short fields and defense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're a good team. We are making small mistakes or, you know, sometimes big mistakes that are causing, we're hurting ourselves sometimes, but that can be corrected.
Yeah.
You know, they just need to be pointed out and shown. You know, even with Donovan Smith in there on our offensive line, we still play well.
Despite him.
Despite him. Yeah, and our defense is really, you know, when we get Quan Alexander back and
maybe shore up the secondary, but I think our offensive line is our most pressing need. I've heard people say, oh, we need to maybe draft a defensive lineman.
No.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No.
We just spent $50 million on our defensive line. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I'm telling Vita Vea is so good. I can't not talk about how good he is. He is so good that we could have a whole bunch of Donovan Smith or who was it? Johnson? Johnson from Cincinnati that Lovey brought over.
Oh, God, he was so bad.
He was so bad, never did a thing. We could have three of those on the defensive line. If we got Vita Vea on there, it's a good defensive line. That's how good he is. I'm telling you. He is going to be Pro Bowl bound every year.
And is he going to make the people around him better?
Yeah, because They're going to have to double team him just to slow him down to 4 seconds, get to the quarterback.
So then it gives everybody else the opportunity to make plays.
Yeah, and he's just a I just really can't talk about how good he is. I just can't stop talking about how good he is. He's that impressive.
So the
But get rid of Grimes and Donovan Smith and our team, you know, we're top notch, man.
And have an off season to really evaluate where our deficiencies are and shore them up, you know?
Yeah.
Just a little bit of time, just an off season.
Yeah, get Winston. You know, Winston has never played behind a good offensive line in the NFL. And I'm not saying our offensive line is bad, but they're a little bit below average, I would say.
You know? Yeah.
They make mistakes at crucial times or whatever. You know, if he had a good offensive line and he wasn't so panicked back there, maybe he could see the field better. Maybe he wouldn't be so locked on receivers and whatnot. Yeah. Don't know. But anyhow, Glazers, if you're hearing this, don't fire Cutter. It's Please. Not all his fault. It can only get better from here. And we're right on the edge, man. Right on the edge.
I am friends with a Panthers fan. I was talking to him the other day. Actually, he's my brother. It's not, we're not friends. Just kidding. Love you. And I was like, so are you guys going to fire Ron Rivera? And he said, well, if we fire Ron Rivera, he's going to have a job before he leaves the building. So that would kind of be stupid.
Yeah, we would probably take him.
And that's what people have said about Cutter, is that he's going to get a job immediately when he leaves.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at his offense. I watch his offense on tape. Man coverage is a weakness for his routes that he draws up. But our receivers are so strong, you know, Evans and them, that they can beat man coverage just by jump balls. But zone coverage, there's always, always, always a receiver open. Always, always. I mean, Cutter is a good, good offensive coordinator. He knows how to, I mean, look at our, we just march up and down the field all the time.
Yeah. At will.
At will. And we're going to lose that.
And we're going to lose everybody. I mean, Humphreys, he's a free agent. Quan's a free agent.
And I like this Duffner. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what the hell the defense is doing back there. I can't figure it out.
Really?
It works.
Yeah.
But he's not running zone. He's not running man. He's got a weird mix of stuff going back there. He doesn't play the regular cover one, cover three.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's very strange. I mean, most of the time I'm like, I have no idea what formation that defense is in.
Yeah, I'd like to see them get another season.
I would too. I would
One
too.
One more season.
We signed the guy for 5 years, give him four minimum.
Yeah. Well, I think this year is his fourth year, right?
Well, he had 1 year under Lovey as offensive coordinator. This is his third year as head coach.
Okay, third. Right? Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
No, we're usually wrong about this stuff.
So I know.
If everybody's out there rolling their eyes, whatever.
So we got Atlanta coming up. It's a totally meaningless game for both teams. They're out of the playoffs. It will have some implications for the division because if we win, So Panthers and Atlanta, they're both 6-9, and we're 5-10. So if we win, we'll be tied with Atlanta at 6-10.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Panthers are playing the Saints. So if they lose, we'll all be 6-10, the three of us. Ooh. And so with all the tiebreakers, we may not be last in the division. So there's that.
There's that.
And then the draft order, we're 6 right now.
Wow.
Which everyone wants us to lose to get for draft picks.
Oh,
but
we're
I'm just not
lose.
A fan of that.
No, we're going to curb stomp it.
Oh, you think so?
Yes.
I hope so. That'd be a good way to go out with a bang.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a beatdown.
You know, I'm a little sad for Cutter because he said in his radio show this week that no matter what happens, he's still going to be a Bucs fan.
Yeah, he did say that.
Ugh, man, that just, I don't even particularly
like him as a person.
Like,
he's not real personable.
Yeah, he's not personal. I mean, but it's just I'm not very attached to him.
Right.
But just for him to say that, I think that's a very classy move, considering all the hate he's getting and everyone wanting him fired.
Yeah, I don't understand that mentality. Like you said, Molly's, we've talked about this for years, about why people always call for firings and
immediately
cuts and
that's
all that
like
stuff.
The first
yeah, it's
thing.
Just people feel bad, you know, you put all this time rooting for a team and then they fail and you want to punish somebody.
Yeah.
It's just punishment, you know. But I think it's, you know, we're cutting off our nose to spite our face here if we get rid of this coaching staff. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be really sad if Monday, if they fire them. It's just going to be a despondency, I guess. It's just like, here we go again.
Yeah.
Rolling the dice. Yeah.
It's just what we've always done. I mean, we keep doing this and we keep expecting different results. And maybe we should consider that it's not the coach.
Why?
Well, because that's the variable we keep changing.
Right.
New coach, new system.
Well, it's kind of like with the whole McCoy thing. You know, it was all the, you know, McCoy's never had a defensive line help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we constantly changed. I mean, we just turned over our defensive line.
Yeah.
God, all the defensive linemen we went through.
So what, we drafted him in 2009, 10?
Yeah.
So for 8 years.
Right.
We've just been churning over the defensive line.
Right. So now we've got a really good defensive line. And McCoy's doing the same exact stuff he's been doing.
Right.
It wasn't the other defensive lineman.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing here. It's like, you know, we keep churning out coaches and firing coaches and firing coaches and firing coaches. It's not the coaches. And if we fire this one, we're going to lose this offensive juggernaut we have. I mean, that's definitely going out the window.
Yeah.
We'll probably lose DeSean Jackson, maybe even Humphreys. You know, because another coach coming in here, he's going to want his players.
Yeah.
You know, they never come in and go, I like this team exactly as it is. They never do that.
Right. And then Humphreys, he might test the free agency.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to have to pay, you know, at least $10 million for Humphreys.
Right. And if you're looking at a team, like if you get a Bill Belichick that comes to you and says, I want you to play for
right.
my team, we're making you an offer.
Right.
You know, would that's you? Guaranteed playoff contenders minimum.
Right.
And so... And then you're looking at the Bucks, who mm-hmm. it's total uncertainty and stability.
Yeah, especially
you don't
a
know
new
what,
coach.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're going to get.
You don't know
into.
What you're getting.
Yeah.
Who are you going to go with?
Right. Yeah. We could lose. We could possibly lose Humphreys, Donovan Smith, Brate.
Quan.
These are just guys up on their contracts. Mm-hmm. McCoy might go. He's still got a year left, right, I think. But
I don't remember. But yeah, I mean, people have been talking about trading him for a few weeks now.
Yeah. Yeah, but my point being is that, you know, this team is right on the brink of being fantastic and we're going to kick it out. We're not getting our butts kicked. You know, we're not a bad team and we're losing because of the refs and our own mistakes. We're beating ourselves. Those
yeah.
things are, you can overcome beating yourself.
Yeah, you
That's
can fix that stuff. Right.
Yeah.
If it's in-house, if it's internal, you can look at it, identify it, and try to improve on it, which we've done all season. We've been doing it all season with the defense, with the quarterback situation, you know, benching Jameis and then bringing him back, and then he's playing better.
Uh-huh.
We've done it all season.
Yeah.
The kicking game. I mean, there's a long list of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I forgot about that. That was a horrendous disaster.
Right.
Kicking game. Ugh. Yeah, we've had a lot of problems this year, a lot of existential stuff, a lot of external stuff, a lot of internal stuff. I don't think we should give up on it, man. So anyhow, that's my feeling. What do you think is going to happen with Atlanta? Wait, give me your predictions.
I don't know. It's a tough one. I wasn't ready for this. Well, they've already said, didn't they re-sign Dan Quinn? Or he's coming back. They
yeah,
said
he's coming
not
back.
Firing him.
Right.
I don't know. It depends on if our team is playing for a cutter or not.
They don't look like they've quit to me.
No?
Except Grimes.
Yeah, well, he's a special case.
Which I don't know if anybody noticed, but they took him out.
Good.
At
he
the
deserved
end of the game
it. He should be benched yeah. this week coming up. He played so bad. Like
he has done nothing this year.
And, like, he doesn't even want to be there.
Right.
He's actually
avoiding
contact.
He avoids contact. He's not covering. I mean, he's really only covering a very small area over there. He won't go to the inside. I guess he doesn't want to get hit or something.
He's not even trying to like bat down balls or anything when he's near there.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been useless.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
So I think it's going to be 23-21 Atlanta. Picking Atlanta.
You're picking Atlanta?
I am picking Holy crap. Atlanta.
It just dawned on me. Shocker
took
over
you
here.
A minute to
I'm writing this one down. Okay, what'd you say? 23-21 Atlanta?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm saying we are going to absolutely curb stomp them. We're going to make this probably the worst game they've had. So I'm looking at, I'm going to say 38-21, and they're only going to get those 21 because they're going to get it in garbage time.
Interesting.
Yeah, we're just going to, we are going to beat the crap out of them.
Really?
Yeah. It's going to be a ferocious beatdown.
I hope they do, because I think that'll make some people doubt, second guess firing Cutter, maybe.
Too many people invested in it. All of the Tampa media is invested in getting rid of Cutter.
Yeah, Peter Report in particular, Joe Buck.
Joe Buck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a shame when you've got that big of a podium and an audience and all you're spreading is negativity.
Yeah.
It's kind of a shame. I think you miss a lot of opportunities there to make the team better.
Yes, it makes me sad, and I can understand why they didn't do it, but it seems like for the past couple of weeks, nobody's watched the game film. And I can understand why, you know,
yeah.
It's just like the season's over. There's no reason to spend it because it takes a long time to go through all that.
Right.
You know, if you do it right. And, you know, people are like, eh.
Yeah,
nothing.
They're talking about the draft
yeah,
and
the draft
prospects.
And firing Cutter.
Yeah,
and who we can get.
What coaches to get.
That seems to be all the conversation. Yeah. And they're missing out on Vita Vea. I'm dead serious. Molly's just over here grinning because, you know, I haven't stopped talking about him.
Ralph's like a kid at Christmas.
Yeah, I really am. I really am. I am so sad that this is the last game of the season because I want to watch this guy forever, man. You know, he's that good. He's that good. He's guys. We have a probably the best defensive lineman on our team, Vita Vea.
Wow.
Yeah, he's right there with Aaron Donald.
Whoa.
It might even be better, especially once he gets more playing time in the NFL. He's unstoppable. Unstoppable. So anyhow, yeah, and the fact that nobody else is freaking out about him just lets me know nobody's watching the game tape. And that's sad.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot going on there. You know, like the ref stuff. You know, I mean, that was 11. Yeah, the refs lost us that game. 100%.
Wow. I mean, the players are still playing.
Yeah, they're playing good, playing hard, except for Grimes. And they're playing well, playing real well. And if Winston could start seeing the field, I mean, we got the defense is tackling. They're not missing tackles. I still don't like their techniques, but it's working. They're getting off blocks. They're avoiding blockers. They're on their assignments. They don't, there aren't wide receivers running around free,
mm-hmm.
open. I mean, you never see that anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe once a game,
true.
Maybe.
Yeah.
In this game, I think it was, I want to say it was Javion Elliott, but don't quote me on that. Got confused and that happened. He thought he was playing zone, and it was man coverage. Everybody else was doing man. He was doing zone, and he ended up letting his guy go, and he ran across the middle. Pretty sure it was Elliot. Anyhow, so, you know, it happened once.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're on top of stuff, and, you know, we're getting our sacks. We're stopping the run. They're not able to throw on us. You know, we're able to march down the field on offense. I mean, it's just we've got everything. All the pieces are in place, and we're getting ready to blow it up, and I hate it. Hate it. So, anyhow. Yeah, but I, you know, watching the film, I'm seeing this, and nobody else is talking about it because everybody else is talking about what coach we're going to get, what draft position we're going to be in. They've quit. They've given up. The fans have given up on
yeah.
this team.
We quit on the team. The team hasn't quit yet.
No, the team hasn't quit yet. They're actually playing pretty good football. All right, so anything else?
Nope, that'll do it.
That'll do it, guys. We got one more episode to go, or one more week to go against Atlanta. I'm predicting they're going to get curb stomped, they're going to get beat to the ground. And Molly thinks they're going to beat us in our own house.
Barely.
She's not a real fan.
Just jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, right. You just know there's a chance that's pretty good you'll be right.
Yeah, maybe.
5-10.
Well, look, it's a close one. 23-21.
Yeah.
That's a close spread.
Well, I'm angry, and I'm hoping that the Bucks are angry. So
yeah.
I'm channeling my anger into my prediction. Okay. All right, that'll do it. If you want to get in contact with us, you can email Molly. Her email address is mollybay@buccaneersobserver.com. I can be reached at ralph@buccaneersobserver.com. You can catch us on Twitter. Our handle is @bucks_observer. Or you can come to our website, leave a comment, check out the content there. I'm going to get those pictures up on the of the screenshots of Winston getting hit in the head as he was getting ready to throw the ball and some of the other things too. Hopefully, I'll get it up. I'll get it up before next season in here. But come to our website, check it out, and leave us a comment if you get a chance. Until then, guys.
Go Bucks!